Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. And this week we're talking about the world's worst Nollywood moment. Nollywood, of course, being the Nigerian film industry. Niche? Yes, but that hasn't stopped us. Not least because the existence of Nollywood, alongside Hollywood, Bollywood and of course Dollywood, has convinced us that there must also be an Ollywood for every other letter of the alphabet. Like Collywood, the film company behind all the Lassie movies. Wallywood, an agency for where all the actors wear red and white striped jumpers and try to blend into a crowd. Lollywood, where all the sets are made out of those sticks from inside lollipops. Follywood, the back catalogue of Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Jollywood, a genre of pornography starring the British aristocracy. Not to be confused with Jolly Good, which produces British aristocratic morality tales. And Pollywood, where instead of cocaine, the executives just want a cracker.
Ha.
And alongside me is the V2V to my MGM. It's Ben Vandeveld.
Hello.
We're in the same room.
Yes, we are. It's very exciting. We're going to... You will have seen us post an overexcited photo on our Twitter feed, but for the first time in 5 months, myself and Barry do not have a care for our own personal safety.
Do you know what else is really weird? By the time this goes out, you probably have another child.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations to me.
Yes.
I have done literally nothing for the past 9 months other than 7 minutes of mediocre cardio. I was just thinking of all the different Ollywoods you could come up with. I was trying to apply my surname to it, and I thought, Vollywood. And that is what I got watching the 2012 beach volleyball in the Olympics.
I don't like being in the same room as you anymore.
You say boo, but the professional comedian is applauding.
No, I sat on a tube writing this and discounted Vollywood for exactly that reason.
Oh, man, gutted. You're giving me a look of, I literally risked my own and the public's health and safety to be in the room for that joke. Fair. Right, before this leads to a worst foot schism, let's introduce this week's guest. He is a globe-trotting, storytelling, hard-grafting, club-headlining star of deadpan stand-up comedy. He's appeared on 8 out of 10 Cats and Comedy Central at the Comedy Store, written for the News Quiz and the Now Show, and shared a room with me at the 27th Edinburgh Festival. He is also... Hang on, that was the wrong date.
Wow, you're so old.
I'm so old.
And it was you, Ola, and F. Scott Fitzgerald.
He is also the creator of Sunday Service, a unique stand-up show inspired with a church theme to bring comedy, music, and live discussion, open to saints and indeed sinners. After over a decade in the game, he has performed everywhere from South Africa to Bulgaria, Norway to Singapore, and now via Skype into your ears. It is the thoroughly excellent Ola.
Hey, that is the weirdest thing, is sitting down through accolades, because you don't know what to do with yourself. I was literally shooting gun fingers in the air. I was looking around. I was like, should I go get a cup of tea? Like, there's literally nothing you can do to not seem like a douchebag while someone reads out all the things you've done.
I think you need to do like the praying hands up to your face, like head nod.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
yeah.
Okay, you're wow, right. Yeah. You're right. Can I just point out that in the movie industry extension that you did, Ghana's one is actually called Gallywood for obvious reasons.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anyone wants to make it in Gollywood.
No.
That wasn't really...
We've got Elstree Studios up in Boreham Wood, which I'm really disappointed we don't have Chorleywood. Isn't on the same pantheon.
Perfect.
Tell me about Sunday Service, because we have a long-running history on this podcast of going, you know, religious groups, not funny. And yet you've managed to create a comedy/religious mashup.
The first thing I did was to make sure I don't put anything that's directly to do with Jesus in it, because I don't want to make that the joke, because I'm actually a Christian myself. So I make it quite clear. I demarcate between like what is sort of the man-made expression in terms of like how a church service runs, or like the visual elements. You know, there's nothing particularly spiritual about like Gothic font, but you just associate that with like... church, right? So that's up for use. And so I use all these different elements because I think essentially at the heart of it, there's something very powerful about gathering people on a weekly basis to listen, to speak, to sing. Those different elements are quite powerful. And I think as an entertainer, I feel like I've been given, and a Christian one as well, I've been given this blueprint for like a very clever, powerful way to bring people together and create an environment or a community just because I experienced it by actually going to church. So I'm like, okay, this actually really applies to comedy. So if I get people around and we all stand up and sing a popular song at the end of the show, or we get together and we have a discussion about a topic, or we sit down, we listen to these stand-ups, tell their jokes for 10 minutes. As far as I'm concerned, like, you're getting a very secularized, fair enough, but it's a version of that togetherness and that meeting in the same place. I think that's powerful, man.
I think you've stopped at just the right point. If you go much further, you start veering into cult. So,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. They always say, like, religion is cult plus time. And to be honest, I think... I think, you know, give me a couple more years. I might have something on my hands. You know, right before the lockdown, I got everybody to bring in like a care pack item, maybe like toothbrush, toothpaste, tinned food or whatever it is for people who are less fortunate than us. And that was the last show before the lockdown. So I literally had all of this stuff right in my house, and then we hit into a lockdown. And then like, my church runs a community kitchen, and so we just moved to a new venue. So we set up like a place to give out free stuff to people in the community who, you know, lost their livelihoods, couldn't work, and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, I had this huge donation, and I really felt like, yo, like, this Sunday service thing that was a joke, and it was kind of like, you know, it's a comedy show, is actually a force for good. We didn't know there was going to be a global pandemic, but it just so happened we collected a bunch of stuff right before people were actually going to need it. So I just kind of feel like, you know, whatever it is you do, you can kind of bring some goodwill to it and some good vibes and really be a force for good in the world. You know, even if all you're doing is just telling your silly masturbatory jokes.
See, that's great. Like, that's why you're not a cult, because if you were part of a cult, when you'd gathered all of these goods in your own house, you'd be like, this is no longer a house, this is my compound. We do know clearly that you are excellent at being a pillar of the comedy and wider community, but what are you worst at in the world?
I've been terrible in the past at talking to women. Oh my goodness, it's been the worst. I literally, this morning, I just had one of those terror flashbacks to a time where I was speaking to a girl and I was like, why would I ever say that? Why did I ever do that? And I just go back and relive some of them and I just really think to myself, you know, there are some people who were destined to get married just because the game needs them out. Like, someone, the single dating market doesn't need Ola roaming around. Like, thank God, someone committed to him for life so he never has to do this again. They should give you like a driving test, you know, for talking to women. You should go past that first in theory, then you go do a practice in a, you know, Wetherspoons or whatever, and then you're allowed to go out.
But would they do it like when you're learning how to drive, where there's two steering wheels, and if you do something wrong, the test driver takes control of the situation?
Yeah.
So they're like, out of the way, I've got the line to really get it.
Yes.
It's got to be, or surely you've got to just do it with two wingmen instead. And then when you're doing quite well, one of them peels off. And if they're like, this kid's got it, the other one peels off.
Oh, I thought you meant you had to look into the left one and the right one before making a move.
He's still working, guys.
Yeah. I've been 5 months waiting to do this in person.
Hello, Worst Foot Forward listeners. This is Anna Pajaiski here, just popping in to say that if you're loving the Worst Foot Forward podcast feed, then you might also enjoy my podcast about materials and making called Handmade. The purpose of the podcast is to bring science and art into conversation and to show that sometimes they're not as separate as you might think.
So I'm very interested in using embroidery to explore what's going down at this sort of quantum level, like entropy and things, and how about the random nature of like atoms and particles.
The conversations range from the sublime.
We live in a world bristling and brimming with extraordinary illusions. You put a straw in a glass of water and it bends and you don't think about it anymore, but it really is a remarkable phenomenon. And so for me, glass is kind of everyday magic.
To the ridiculous.
Full penetration butt world. It's a serious thing.
But always with the aim to inspire, inform and intrigue listeners about the wonderful world of materials. You can find us by searching for Handmade wherever you find your podcasts.
First of all, like, I imagine most of our listeners being in Britain, the States and Australia don't know too much about Nollywood. So let's talk about how huge it is, first of all. So Nollywood produces approximately 1,500 movies a year. That's 50 films a week, which is nuts. In comparison, the United States produces about 16 films a week. And in terms of size, from the article that I found, it accounts for 2% of Nigeria's GDP.
Yeah.
Nigeria is one of those countries, I think British people don't realise how big it is. Because there's like, what, 130 million people in Nigeria?
It's like 200 million. But it's Nigeria is the most populous black nation on earth, right? So it's something that if you are outside the realms of sort of Eurocentric learning, then you know, but because you're constantly showed the world in a certain way, you don't realize like the amount of impact that Nigeria has on the world. Looking at these stats is fantastic, but also, you know, there are, I think the anecdotes help as well. And if you start to look at some of the more successful people in the country, you start to realize who's of Nigerian heritage. Sometimes you start to go, okay, Nigeria's really had an effect. You know, when you see some of the athletes like, you know, Chris Akabusi or Christine Ohorogu, or, you know, you look at artists, you see, you know, Lamar Tiny Temper, Dizzy Rascal's half Nigerian. Or if you look at, you know, all these different fields and you go, okay, yeah, Nigerians are really present, like wherever you go. And that, I think, is really powerful about Nigeria, is that somehow we've managed to infiltrate everywhere, but still somehow only be known for fraud scams, emails. Yeah, we need to work on our PR a little bit, but that's it's a huge country.
Well, it's weird, because the next thing I was going to say as well is, being such a huge country, it's like similar to India. Like in India, there are hundreds of languages, and similar with Nigeria and similar in Nollywood. And it feels like Indian culture feels more heavily baked into British culture because the Victorians were so obsessed with it, and then there's the rebirth in the 60s. But you're right, it's like if in Britain we knew nothing of Indian culture other than that they were the end of the phone whenever we had a problem with our computer. And it's you're right, just that, like, Nigeria needs to up its game.
The other thing as well is, the closer you get back to home, to Nigeria, like, I read some things about the term Nollywood. Some people think it's offensive because it's not creating its own identity. It's taking an existing thing like Hollywood and going, this thing is also that.
Yeah.
But also, some people will put, you mentioned Gollywood, some of the other West African film industries under the umbrella of Nollywood because the Nigerian film industry is so massive. I think it has a tradition back to the 50s as a former British colony. It borrows the British tradition of filmmaking, and so it had that established there. There are beginning to become other film industries in West Africa and Africa generally, but they take their lead, if you like, from the Nigerian one.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that Nigeria's always had that kind of influence in the region, and it's, you know, the cause of much sort of infighting or in jokes or whatever. But it's like, I remember reading, you know, the Wikipedia page for a very popular song, which most Nigerians assume is Nigerian. It's actually not Nigerian. I think the guy who sang it's from Cameroon or something. But even in the Wikipedia page, like, they only list it as a hit when it became a hit in Lagos. And so there is a certain arrogance that Nigerians come with that makes you just kind of assume that you don't really mean anything until you mean something to Nigerians. Like, if we don't really respect you, like, you're not really doing anything in terms of West Africa or Africa in general. You have stars in Nollywood who are Ghanaians, Lebanese, or whatever it is, but they'll come to Nigeria because that's the way the huge market is.
Is Nigeria to West Africa as England is to the United Kingdom? Like, in the way that, like, Scottish people hate being called English by Americans, and they'll be like, Ghanaians going, I'm not fucking Nigerian.
When she gets nominated for an award, Saoirse Ronan is suddenly British.
Yeah. Yeah, but when she loses in the final at Wimbledon, she goes back to being Irish.
Nigeria has a huge comedy industry. Comedians make, you know, some of the comedians who do well there make more money than some of us do. But it doesn't translate outside of it. You don't really see Nigerian comedians really taking that step from Nigeria and, like, getting on Netflix and so on. I really want to be like that adapter plug, because I'm both Nigerian and British. That sort of, like, connects Nigeria to the rest of the world. That's the way I kind of visualize it. So as an industry, one of the reasons why Nollywood is so powerful is because it wasn't trying to be Hollywood. Like, these people weren't trying to make it to America or make it into a, you know, a Steven Spielberg film. They were like, we're going to make for our market and we've got enough people to sell to. Yeah. And if we keep doing this, we'll be big on our own. And then if you now look at it from outside of that cultural thing, oh my goodness, Nollywood looks crazy. When you're inside of it, you go, okay, this makes 100% sense. I get it now.
Yeah, and it's got this real sort of DIY aesthetic, particularly the stuff from the famous movie that kicked everything off was made or at least spearheaded by two chaps. One called OK Ogunjiafor, and Kenneth. Is it Nnebue? Is that how I pronounce his name?
Nnebue,
Kenneth Nnebue. I mean, he stuck two N's at the start of his surname.
Igbo people, they have this double N thing where they go,
In my mind, I'm just imagining what would happen if someone from, is it the Igbo tribe, married someone Welsh. And the absolute catastrophe of their hyphened name. Yeah, so these two chaps we spoke about, the first real hit in Nollywood is from 1992, and it was a film called Living in Bondage. And the plot of Living in Bondage should give you an idea of sort of the melodrama that exists within an awful lot of cinema. Oh man, hang on, I've realised I've just deleted it from my damn it.
Can you do Control Z?
Oh no, I haven't immediately deleted it.
I mean, googling the phrase living in bondage is a tricky thing.
That was a high risk manoeuvre. the plot of Living in Bondage is pretty full on. So a chap called Ande Okeke and his wife Merit face pretty severe obstacles during their life. And despite the support and patience of his wife, this chap is driven to near depression and he's determined to achieve wealth by any means, including going to a satanic cult where members pledge their loyalty to Lucifer and kill their loved ones in ritualized sacrifices to gain enormous wealth in return. And it's all about evangelical Christians trying to rescue him from this money-hunting, Lucifer-worshipping cult. And to be honest, I'm absolutely in. That is...
I like the fact that it's as many Nollywood films are I discovered in two parts.
I can explain the two parts thing.
Go on.
And I just want to say that satanic cult thing is a running theme. There's I don't know if it's a genre or just like a prerequisite for a Nollywood film, but there is a lot to do with cults, which is, Nigeria is a very spiritual country. Like, they see spiritual elements in almost everything they do. So even when Nigerians practice Christianity, it's highly spiritual. The culture and the understanding is that life is way more spiritual than we see. Now, the part one, part two thing. Nigerians at first, when the technology came out so that, you know, stuff was being released on DVD, a lot of Nigerians didn't have DVD players. They had VCD players, right? You put the video on a CD, the same technology as an audio compact disc, but they could play videos. Uh-huh. And it was sort of like a step down technology from the DVD player. So they put out these VCDs, but because they're not a DVD, they don't hold as much, right?
Ah.
So you'd have to basically put out at least two to get the movie across. But what they started doing was they now started making it more of an opportunity for a cliffhanger. It's now started getting so ridiculous to the point where the first, you almost know that when you buy the first VCD, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. They're going to wait
your time just to get you. And then right in the last 10 to 15 minutes, they will get you so invested in the story that you have to go out and buy it because literally nothing has happened.
Yeah.
You've got to the point where you now know all the characters. They've made you watch so much. It's so many establishing shots. So literally if someone's going to get out of their room and go into the car, you'll watch every moment from them putting the jacket on.
Yeah.
They're fiddling with the zip. And then they're looking for their keys. And then they're opening the door. And you're these guys, they come again. And it just became part of the filmmaking style because that was what was making money. It was profitable to do it that way. And so literally you started to see movies kind of go to part three, part four. And sometimes what they actually started doing was they started naming part three and part four a different name. So let's say Living in Bondage was in four parts. There'd be Living in Bondage 1, Living in Bondage Part 2. Then there'll be Freedom from Chains Part 1, Freedom from Chains. So then you go and buy Freedom from Chains Part 1. You realize it's actually the sequel to Living in Bondage. So you now have to go back and buy Living in Bondage.
It's just like Star Wars that starts with Episode 4.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so much of Nollywood filmmaking, certainly up until the past couple of years, was done on a shoestring. So, you know, editors are very much far down the chain of what you can afford.
I did watch one, and the credits start with a thank you to all the people who've clearly let them use their houses and shops for free as shooting locations.
I'm really fascinated in how a style develops from the circumstances that it grows up in. You can definitely see product placement in a Nollywood film, right? So if someone goes into a shop, I don't know whether they stipulate it in the contract or whatever it is, but not only will we see the name of the shop, we'll literally see this person browse through all of the goods and be like, excuse me, sir, how much is this phone? This phone right here is the latest phone, top phones we sell here at Ajimoshu's Phone Emporium. We sell the greatest phones starting from 10,000 naira up to 1 million naira. And it's like, come on, like, my guy. I get it. The guy let you use his shop, so now you have to promote his business. But does it have to be this on the nose? And that's the thing. There's no subtlety. It does have to be that on the nose.
The other thing that I love, and I think some sort of Bollywood movies share this as well, is the delightfully shonky special effects. In some of the remakes. And the best way I could describe it, if you've never watched it, most of the special effects look like they have been ripped and stolen from the original Mortal Kombat on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah! I always say it looks like the special effects are done on Microsoft PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Literally everything zooms in from left, zoom in from right, zoom from above. It's literally, you know, I think it's up for mockery because I very much enjoy doing that. But I think it's also something to be applauded because it's like with such little resources, these guys put whatever, like literally what everyone's doing now on social media and, you know, like on TikTok, they'll give you a little effect and you try and make something funny out of it or interesting out of it. That's literally what they were doing with whatever effects they had at that time. Yeah. And this is before, like, everyone had a MacBook and a DSLR and could shoot at a certain quality. And so the fact that they were doing this much, to me, like, it puts it all in context.
I would like to have seen the low-budget Nollywood version of Game of Thrones where Emilia Clarke is acting opposite Clippy. It looks like you want to become the king.
Yeah. There's a lovely description. I found an article from the New York Times about this thing that makes Nollywood so charming. And it says, basically, journalist was speaking to a medical doctor friend of theirs who was Nigerian, and he described Nollywood filmmaking activities like performing open heart surgery with forks and knives. But the genius of it is that the patient actually survives.
Yes.
And my two favourite versions of these special effects, one is where there's like a woman, she's carrying like a washing basin, and I presume she is magical in some way because she lifts her hand and a stone rises up in the air, spinning, flies through the air, and then crashes on top of another woman. But it's sort of like a Wicked Witch of the West in the Wizard of Oz thing. But it's so clearly that she's reacting to just a trapezoid being dropped in her from clip art. And then there's another great one. I have no idea what film it's from, but the top of the Tower of Big Ben breaks off, becomes a rocket ship by turning 90 degrees horizontally, flies through the air with flames coming out of its behind, and then somehow ends up in Rio and flies past Christ the Redeemer, knocking Christ the Redeemer off. But as soon as the Christ the Redeemer falls off, a new Christ the Redeemer comes back immediately.
Was that like an episode of The Goodies?
Yeah, yes, that's exactly what it sounds like.
My goodness.
You're right, it can be done so inventively. There's one shot I found that on the website I found it on was, it said it was Nollywood, but like we were talking about before, it's actually a Ugandan filmmaker. And it's
who killed Captain Alex?
Is it? Okay. I'm about to talk about a helicopter shot.
Yeah.
It's astonishing because it's a classic action movie, people ducking under the propellers to get in, and it's using like a kid's Playmobil helicopter, and the first shot is like through the tail fin, and then it cuts to the guys running towards it, and then it cuts to a completely different movie of a man in the cockpit, and then back to filming through this child's helicopter. But the thing is, once you get over that, the actual angles that it's shot at are fucking great.
Yeah. Are they just playing with the perspective? Are they like running on the spot in the background so they don't actually get closer to it?
I'm telling you, these things, you know, they go through stages, and I think Nollywood's been through its mockery, and now it's getting to a level of appreciation for being what it is. And I'm telling you, it's going to reach a legendary status one day, and it's going to be like an exercise for film school students. Can you shoot an action movie with toys? Like, if you can't do that, you're not ready to graduate. That's important for anybody consuming Nollywood. Yes, by all means, go on YouTube, just watch a few, and just like... see what happens, but also learn something about why it is the way it is, and I think that'll help you appreciate it a bit more.
Most of my research came from a couple of great articles on Vice and Vulture, and they talk about how some movies are made in 36 hours. Like I said before, they hire shops and office space. They'll hire particularly Mercedes and BMWs to sort of give it a slightly sort of classier feel. But the problem with hiring cars is Lagos in particular, full of traffic jams. So often scenes will be filmed in a traffic jam. And there in Nigeria, I don't know if it still does now, but obviously in the nascent days of Nollywood had huge power outage problems. So people on set would have to carry around their own generators. You're trying to make a 2.5 hour feature film in a day and a half with a generator.
To be honest, I think you understand Nigerians when you understand the ability to struggle and make the most of nothing. I would like to see Nigeria mature from that and start to do well and thrive and not only know how to do struggle really well, but the fact that they have done struggle really well is amazing. I've been on set at like the Nigerian version of The Daily Show and the top sort of sitcom in Nigeria is called My Flatmates. And I've been on set there and been backstage, and I've seen that, you know, there is a slow but steady growth towards doing things that may be a bit more of an international standard or in a bit more conventional way. And that's great as well. But I also love the sort of run and gun. 36 hours to shoot a movie. We need a generator. We can make it happen. Kind of approach.
Listen, we have given our love to an awful lot of Nollywood. It's time for my nomination for the worst moment. And I found a movie called Festival of Love that was shot both in Nigeria and Ghana. A friend of the journalist that I read about this article from, a guy called George, who's a white guy from, I don't know whether he's British or American, but he was volunteering for a football organisation working in Africa, and he was drinking in a bar in the evening with a Nigerian politician called Dundo Nsawam, and it turned out that his best mate was a top casting agent in Nollywood, and they needed a white guy for his new film, and he got roped into it. It basically, his casting, he got taken into a back alley in the city he was in. In the room, there's these five Nigerian guys in suits smoking Cuban cigars, and that's basically his audition. And his audition was to play this proper fire and brimstone preacher. We've all been to auditions. You walk into the audition room, everyone looks like you.
Well, no, I haven't really been into an audition, everyone looks like me, but I do.
He goes in, and the guy before him is an overweight Ukrainian guy covered in gold chains.
But good casting directors bring in like a few like oddball diverse slate. The client has an idea of what they want, and a good casting director will bring in a few people that fit that, but also a couple of left field ideas.
Yes, of course. The opening question from the audition panel wasn't, what's your CV? Where have you been working lately? It was, are you a Christian? And he decided to say yes, because he thought that would help. Because the denouement of this is going to be him falling in love with a goddess. The line that he had to practice was, you are the most beautiful black creature I have ever seen in my life. Which is, like, it's a hell of an opening gambit, isn't it?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, he's talking to the goddess at that point.
Yeah.
It's not like a panther.
Yeah.
It starts in a pet shop.
Yeah.
And he goes, here at this pet shop, we do all sorts of panthers. From 10,000 naira right up to 1 million naira.
The plot of it is essentially that it is set in a place that is famous for practicing old African magic, some of it involves some fairly sinister stuff. And so the prince of this place has gone, studied in Oxford. He has met Pastor Williams, George's character, who's converted him to Christianity. And then the prince goes back and tries to convert his village and save it from that. But there is an evil goddess of dark magic who makes it hard for him. So Pastor Williams comes over and tries to bewitch this evil goddess with his preaching. And there is a scene where he tries to woo her in a waterfall. It's the oddest couple scene I've ever seen, because there's a Nigerian actress who is perfectly at home there and apparently was an absolute diva. And again, skinny white guy going, I don't know how I've ended up here. I should be in a hostel. And
listen, we've all, I don't know, I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone. We've all had sex in the shower, and it is not as sexy as it looks, because water's going in your mouth.
Yeah.
And like, it makes it difficult to speak properly. Yeah. And then you just go to full-blown waterfall.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, of course. And the problem is, like, you think you may be sort of crying out an orgasmic joy, but really you're just gargling.
Yeah.
And it's not ideal. And the hardest thing for him, and remember, this guy is not a trained actor. At one point, they gave him a Bible and a loudspeaker and said, you now have to improvise a monologue about the beginning of time and why people should be saved by Christianity. And he's like, I'm a fucking backpacker, guys. What do you want me to do? And he did it with, like, you know, just again, passing Nigerians in the street, just heckling support and love with him all the way through.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he said the worst bit was because this scene took ages to film, and by the end, an audience of about 200 school children had formed around him behind the camera crew. So when he finally did the take that they put in the film, he yelled, deliver the devil from the depths of your soul, and these 200 school children started cheering at him.
Yes.
Nigeria is a crazy place.
So. It really is. So that is my nomination for the world's worst Nollywood moment.
I hear English words from Nigerians that I don't hear from English people. These words are correct in this English language, but no English person ever says, like, you passed your exams, it's time to jubilate. Like, nobody says this.
Yes.
But you will hear a Nigerian say this. And so, you know, when you see that kind of language being brought into the movies and so on, it makes for really humorous situations. In terms of, like, what I've really enjoyed about Nollywood is that they've got a couple of sort of fish out of water movies. One of them was called Jennifer, and that was huge. It was about this woman who comes from the village, and so she's very uncouth and very unrefined, and she goes to uni where a lot of the sort of middle class, upper middle class kids are, and she tries to fit in. So obviously she mispronounces words, and she's just very kind of rough around the edges, and that you know, creates plenty of laughs. And there's another one called Osofia in London. That one, again, obviously you've got two countries involved. It's a, you know, multinational shoot. It's this guy leaves the village and comes to London, and now, you know, you see him trying to, like, pick a pigeon at Trafalgar Square for dinner, and, you know, see something, try and hunt, and try and, you know, just all those kind of, like, scenes where you can see this guy clearly doesn't fit in.
Yeah.
So those ones I think are interesting, but they're not really always my favorite. There is often an element of someone coming from the village to the city, because that is a lot of people's story. You know, cities, in terms of these huge mega cities, are fairly new in terms of introduction. So, like, even though my family's from Lagos, if you trace back a few generations, they wouldn't be, because Lagos wasn't anything huge. But because of, obviously, colonialism and blah, 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 these huge mega cities form, and that's where the wealth concentrated. So a lot of people have this story about leaving somewhere more rural to come to the big city to come and make it, which leads me to my two favorite Nollywood movies. One of them is called Fishers of Men. The rough synopsis of it is that there's this sort of middle-aged, slightly older woman. So her husband dies in the village. While she's in mourning, she goes to sneak out to go and, like, sleep with this other guy in the village because he gives her money. And you begin to realize that all this woman really cares about is her own acquisition of money and comfort and so on. She eventually realizes that this guy that's trying to give her money, he doesn't even really have money. He's barely struggling to keep up his own family. So she sends her children to Lagos to go make it. The son goes to, like, work in an electronic shop. The daughter lands in Lagos and just happens to see a girl she went to school with. On the bus, a guy speaks to her. She goes to a hotel to sleep with that guy the first night. Her mom's basically told her, like, you need to go sleep with guys to make money. The guy, like, bangs her and leaves her in the hotel room. Like, she was so dazzled because he ordered pizza. Like, that was really, like, leaves. And now she has to do the dishes in the hotel and, like, work off her money. One of her old schoolmates comes into the hotel, and like, oh, I can't see you languishing like this. Come and live with me. So she tries to put her on her feet. But when she gets into the house, she starts sleeping with her schoolmate's husband because he's fairly well-to-do. She breaks up their marriage, even though that woman just tried to help her and bring her in. But then soon realizes that that guy's dad is actually where the real money is and starts cheating on him with his dad.
This is so good!
She now brings her mum from the village. Her mum comes to Lagos to now see that her daughter's now made it. She's living well. She's got this, you know, big sugar daddy. Her son is working in electronic shop. She's like, okay, you're doing all right. But then she's like, tells her son, like, look, you need to up the hustle. Like, earning a steady wage isn't enough. Figure out something else. The son starts trying to steal from the electronic shop. He gets caught, loses everything. The mom now takes the sugar daddy away from her daughter because she figures, like, waiting for her daughter to give her a little pocket money is no longer enough. So they go into this showdown of like who can dress the most skimpiest.
Oh, and, wow.
Like, be the sexiest and attract this guy. But in the end, like, the mum figures out that the real angle is not to try and compete with her daughter in terms of being sexy, but to play the emotional route of like, I know what it's like to lose a spouse. You know, I know your wife died. My husband also died. I need comfort. I can comfort you. She takes the man away from her daughter. The daughter now absolutely like loses it. She goes crazy. At some point, she ends up living on the street and something happens to her. She goes to hospital and the person that ends up treating her in hospital is the woman that picked her up the first time, but she slept with her husband and that woman now forgives her and goes right. Oh my goodness, the drama, the twists, the turns.
It's like a roller coaster of emotions, all I can take. Yeah. I haven't even watched it. I'm just listening to the synopsis.
I sort of feel like the whole mother versus daughter competing element, I'm getting real sort of Jamie Lee Curtis Disney remake feel.
Yes.
You know, it's not quite Freaky Friday, but that sort of vibe.
Yeah, something like that, I guess, yeah. And the second one is called Reggae Boys. And again, basically, there's these two very popular actors, comedic actors in Nigeria. Now, they are both very short. I don't know. Yeah, I think they're medically dwarfs, or I don't know what the correct term is, but they're little people. Yeah. And they're affectionately known as Aki and Popo because that was their names in one like, very popular movie that they did. So Aki and Popo are born to this woman. And it's so ridiculous because they set it up so, like, for you to understand why they're born short, they show the woman while she's pregnant and she's basically, she just causes trouble everywhere. She gets into all these fights. She's just very, like, angry and testy during her pregnancy, and she gets very angry at an old blind woman for knocking over her pot of stew with her walking cane. Who writes this stuff? So she, like, basically goes off with this old woman. This old woman basically says to her, like, it can't be well with you, basically puts like an old woman's curse on her, so her children come out to the point where their growth is stunted. So these guys are fully grown men, but they're consistently playing boys all the time.
Listeners, you may well have seen these guys because they became incredibly famous in memes.
Yes. There's,
if you've ever seen a meme of what you think is a young black boy with an incredibly expressive face, either crying or looking perplexed, or there's one where he sort of brandishes a machete and then in a sort of Larry David style loses faith in the whole business and drops it down and walks off, and you're looking at the going, that child looks really old. He's a 35-year-old man. Wow.
Yeah. Fully grown man. Yeah. And in this movie, they their dad is really upset about the fact that his sons are short. He basically has a mistress on the side and has a son with her who grows really tall. And so that becomes his favorite son. The boys now figure out that, like, nobody loves them. Their mum runs away at one point. They've fallen out of favor because he's not happy about his sons. So now he's moved his new mistress in and he's got the big tall son that's his favorite. So the boys basically steal the head of Ogugu. Now, basically, their dad is a traditional medicine man, I guess. People come to him to consult the gods and so on. So he has basically a shrine. They steal their head and for good luck, and they steal all the money that belongs to that god. And they try and they run to Lagos to try and make it. All they have is the address of one distant uncle that they haven't seen for a long time. They get there and the uncle no longer lives there. They have nothing. They have nowhere to go there in Lagos. They go to a church for help, and basically the guy at the church gives them a job as security guards. Tiny guys. You see them with their little baton and they're running around like trying to be security guards. It's funny. On one particular day, they let a guy in. They even like hassle him, but he's like a very important member of the church. They don't know why. So they apologize. He comes in and they're just sitting around like singing. And they have this like song that they've made up. And it's like, we will be there, eh, eh. You will be there, eh, eh. Basically, the guy comes out. He's a record producer. He sees them and he's like, I like how you guys sing. These guys have terrible voices, by the way. He's like, I want to get you in the studio. I think like we could really do something with you. He gets them in the studio and they go into the worst like lip synced recording session ever. And they're proper like, really giving it like Craig David on the cover of Born to Do It vibes. But like, it's clear they've got someone else in to do the vocals now. They become huge stars with this song. It blows up all over Lagos and blah, blah, blah. They now go back to the village to go and like, you know, find their mom and blah, 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 and show how well they've done. Turns out their tall half brother is basically been useless. Just because he's been tall, he's kind of assumed like everything's gonna be given to him. At one point, he even rapes a girl in the village, and like, no, he doesn't feel like anyone can touch him, anyone can talk to him. He's basically been spoiled. He now basically becomes upset because these little boys are now getting all of the love and attention because obviously they've done well, they've made money. So he decides he's gonna do the same thing. When they came back, by the way, they returned the god, they returned the money, and basically everything was okay. Their dad didn't even trip because they'd done so well. Tall boy now tries to steal it and run to Lagos to try and make money. He says like he's heard that the white man will pay for these artifacts, so he's gonna go and try and find a Westerner to sell this god.
I love it. He's like a Nigerian Dell boy.
I know, right? And basically he does that, and basically by doing that he incurs these curses on himself. He gets these really ridiculously like plasticine stuck on boils. and basically he dies at the end of the scene, and like even his brothers come back just to watch him. They're just looking at him like sadly as he dies.
There's an amazing range between like the comedy and the like, exactly, like violence and drama in some of the films as well. Like it really, you can't really catch the tone of some of the Nollywood films.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like literally you can switch from one moment to another, and they can be in the same scene. Like it's an outlook on life that is so brutalist that you kind of have to respect it for what it is. Because they churn them out weekly, they also try and stay like topical as well, which is weird. There was a time where the two rappers Drake and Meek Mill were in beef. And they had a movie called Drake and Meek Mill. They've had one called Beyonce versus Rihanna.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, they'll say, oh, because this one's light skin, this one's clearly Drake. And if this one's dark skin, this one's Meek Mill. And it might have nothing to do with the rap stories, but it's literally just such a good marketing hook because you hear about it.
I also saw Obama Babes, which I have a lot of time for. And, you know, fingers crossed for Biden Babes in 2021, eh?
There's definitely one called White Hunters with Nigerian women who their main status symbol is to acquire a white husband.
Yeah.
And like one of them tries to do it, and I think she ends up with like a really like disgusting Lebanese guy who like spits everywhere. No, even I think it was even an Indian guy or something. And she's like, it's close enough to a bit like finding a white guy. And it was just like some of these, like, it's just not politically correct for sure. But it also, it's like the thinking and the methodology behind it is so ridiculous that you almost have to conform to a new way of thinking in order to understand the movie.
Yeah.
Like if you see like an entire movie about people's whole entire being is centered around acquisition of a BlackBerry phone, it doesn't mean anything to you because you're like, surely you go down and get a contract, like, down and blah, blah, blah. But when you see in the context there where you're not getting these mobile networks handing out, everybody buys their handsets outright. And then you see the context of like how people are often use wealth to like categorize themselves. And if you don't seem like you belong, you don't get more opportunities. And then you start to see like in the environment, maybe it's like a university campus and it's like, you know, to get access to some of the best hostels, you need to be with the in crowd, and to be in the in crowd, you have to dress a certain way and, you know, carry a certain phone. So you need the phone to get in with the in crowd to get access to, like, a decent place to live.
It's just Mean Girls. It's a different context.
Mean Girls, but just in such a weird microcosm, because the movie just basically expresses Nigeria, but in a small form. Mm. And then you get so engrossed in it to the point where you're like, oh, I need to get an iPhone. Like, I think the worst moment that I've seen, there was one movie where this woman basically wants to make it, so she's about to be inducted into a coven of witches. And basically they tell her that for her to finish her initiation, she needs to sleep in a coffin with a snake. And it's the worst CGI snake you've ever seen. it's literally on loop doing the same slither, and then it like back, and then she wakes up the next morning and they let her out of the coffin. She's like, where's the snake? They're like, the snake has entered you. And so if you ever break the oath, the snake will kill you from the inside. Like, how did the snake get inside of me? You telling me a snake crawled into this woman's vagina overnight? Whoa. So she could be initiated into a coven of witches?
See, I thought she was going to have the really smooth way of leaving. The guys would go, where's the snake? And she's just wearing really smart snake skin shoes and a little handbag. If Slytherin was a frat house, then that would be what you would have to do to get into Slytherin.
Oh, my goodness.
I mentioned him already, Ayo McCoon, or AY, the comedian. He was involved in one of Nigeria's first, like, big false advertising publicity lawsuits. He was in a film called The Number One Fan. I don't know if you've seen this.
I haven't, no.
Yeah, it was released in, like, 2011 or 2012.
Okay.
And the original film was, like, six men's faces around the edge of the screen, and then and the main actress, Juliette Ibrahim, in the middle. Yeah. And in about 2015, they released the DVD of it. But I think in the intervening years, AY had become a bit bigger. Mm-hmm. And he, in the film, is like a small role as an inspector who has an interrogation scene. And according to reviews, is like not very good. It's a drama, and he basically like plays a really humorous interrogation scene. And like, I don't really understand this. When they released the DVD version of it, the film distributor marketed the film as not The Number One Fan, but Inspector AY. With his image boldly in the center of the ad, like doing a sort of like wide stance, sort of coy look to the camera in like his full inspector gear, and scenes from the film around the bottom. So Juliette Ibrahim completely vanished from the front, from the publicity for this.
Yeah.
But he, in fairness to him, posted on Instagram saying that it came as a surprise to him because he had only played a supporting role in the movie and he'd never agreed to the use of his brand in marketing it. And he was going to try and use whatever instruments he could to correct it because he didn't feel it properly reflected the film and wasn't fair on the rest of them.
There is a big tradition of like just trying to get a big face in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, especially if someone's up and coming or if they're already big, like that sells movies. And you know, that's the reason why obviously they switched the name of that movie to Inspector AY, because it's like AY has a really good brand. Now, I don't know if he does that much stand-up anymore, but he's like, he's really known well as a businessman, and you know, he's really branched out from where he was originally. And so, yeah, like when you're trying to sell a movie, you haven't really got time for like artistic loyalty to.
Do you subscribe to iRoko?
I did briefly. I think I did the free trial and then I left it.
So that's basically Netflix for African films and Nigerian films especially. It was set up in 2011 with a HQ in London by a guy called Jason Njoku, who was born in South London, but of Nigerian family, and then went back and lived in Nigeria for a few years and then came back to London. I love this. iRoko TV was his 11th attempt at starting a business. His previous attempts included a blog network, a t-shirt business, and a web design company. And as I say, he was born and raised in Deptford, and he came up with iRoko as a distribution platform for Nollywood's biggest movies while living at home with his mum, aged 30. he's like a multi-millionaire. He raised $45 million in venture capital to set up Bairoku.
That's so impressive.
Because people just went, this is a huge untapped market. Of course there should be a Netflix, but for Nigerian and African films. And he's, you know, working class council estate kid. His mum raised him and four siblings while working for the NHS. They pay between about $8,000 and $25,000 per film for a period of time. And basically, it absolutely makes a huge amount of sense. A lot of, I think even now, most of the Nollywood, like 50% of Nollywood film profits come from movie theatre sales. It was an area for filmmakers that they hadn't tapped into and now is providing them with funds to make bigger and better features. So it completely makes sense. When he started pitching it to people, it was almost like I'd come from the future. Because they've not encountered anything like that. It just happened so quickly, the idea of distributing films in that way.
That's why I think it's really powerful what I was saying before about wanting to connect, be the adapter to connect Nigeria to the world. Like, if you'd already known about Netflix or whatever it is, you know, or even Love Film back in the day before it became Amazon Prime and so on, you would know that because you've been in that environment, but you've also been in Nigeria, so you can understand how powerful the impact of these movies is, and you being able to be that bridge and connect it is the reason why now Nollywood is on Netflix. Nollywood is on aeroplanes, and, you know, you can watch Nollywood films in way more places. And I think that, you know, once you're able to plug that up, you know, maybe I too can move out of my mum's house.
Iroko provides a load of films for Indian Airlines and American Airlines, because they say that they've got 1.24 million subscribers on YouTube. There's a huge, I think maybe they have more subscribers in London than they do in Nigeria, because there's just a huge diaspora as well to tap into. So it connects Nigerians around the world back with their home culture.
They did a really good job of introducing the idea to Nigerians, because we were kind of set in our ways as to how you get movies. And, you know, if you're in Nigeria, you kind of, there'll be a few shops that sell them, but most of the time you buy them in traffic. Sold in traffic. So usually, like, if you're selling them on the street, you kind of need to be able to give a quick synopsis on the road, like, this one's good, this one's good, this one is blah blah blah. Mm. You know, you point to a star or whatever it is to sell them to people in their cars. And then if you're in the UK, you have to go to like Peckham or Brixton, and the same place that does the hair and the meat would have the movies. But
hair, meat and movies is a, I would definitely walk into that shop if that's what it said above the archway.
Yeah, because, you know, these guys, these distributors, they were just like, any which way, as long as you get it to the people, it's fine.
Yeah.
For them to now grow out of that and, you know, have it streaming online and have it, you know, distributed in terms of, you know, airlines and wider streaming services and so on is obviously powerful.
They're on Netflix and they're trying to, you know, bridge that gap. Well, ROK Film Studios was created to create original content for IROC. Or Iroko. So that's basically Netflix Studios, but that makes their in-house stuff. And Jason Njoku's wife, so Jason's the CEO of Iroko TV, his wife is an actress and producer called Mary Njoku. She founded the studios, and it has just been bought by Canal Plus, the French, francophone massive network with worldwide reach. And they've bought it saying, we are acquiring the talent of Mary. They want her to stay on board. She's going to, you know, be given a huge amount of production resources because they want to, as they say, give Mary maximum autonomy and creative freedom so that they can continue to produce movies in this way, but also bridge the gap to the Francophone African market in the way that, because Nigeria is an English-speaking market. So they want her to try, they want to basically try and recreate the magic that Iroko have had with the English-speaking African market, with the French market as well. So I went on a website, Zococo.com, which basically seems like BuzzFeed, but for Nigeria. Because it had like a headline on the front page was, four Nollywood movies we still can't believe got made.
Believe which Nollywood actress you are.
Oh, my friend, I took a quiz on another website. I took a quiz on that website to find out, if I was a Nollywood movie, what Nollywood movie would I be? And that movie was on this list of four Nollywood movies we can't believe got made.
Brilliant.
Let me tell you about a couple of the others. Beyonce and Rihanna, we mentioned already. Nadia Buhari and Omotola Jalade Ekeinde pay Beyonce and Rihanna. pop superstar divas who hate each other's guts, and they also happen to have eyes for the same man, a music producer who goes by the name of Jay.
Brilliant. And does most of the action take place in a lift?
The review of it says, watch this and be amused by all the cheap wigs. Jim Aiki's Jay-Z impression and the lip syncing that made the movie feel like a Beyonce and Rihanna greatest hits compilation. The best part comes at the end of part two, obviously, because it's in two parts, when both characters are set to perform in a competition against each other, but Beyonce passes out on stage because she overdoses on energy drinks. But that's not the film I got, nor was it Stolen Bible, which Kate Henshaw plays Apollonia, a girl who steals a Bible and gets cursed with the spirit of kleptomania by the person she stole from. The movie is a string of hilarious hijinks caused by her inability to stop stealing. After her mother ships her off to a convent to get help, Apollonia gathers a few friends to join her in stealing money from a Babalawo's shrine, that's a priest's shrine. Yeah. He curses them with elephantiasis and cancer.
Oh, that's quite a step change.
Hilarious hijinks into you've got cancer.
This is what I'm saying. This is literally how it went in Reggae Boys, where it was like, this guy steals the head of a Google and next thing he's got boils and he's dying.
But I did this quiz on Zococo.com and I got, what film am I? I am Blackberry Babes, guys, who we've mentioned already.
Okay.
Now, Blackberry Babes, I think, has spawned about 5 sequels or something at this point.
Yeah.
One of the sequels, there's a scene where a girl uses juju to turn her sugar daddy into a Blackberry Bold 5 and then runs off with it, leaving the super expensive SUV she's been driving behind her.
That's immense.
If you are not interested in watching a Nollywood film, you're missing out on life, man.
I didn't get to see that, so I had to go with something that I actually seen. But I did find Blackberry Babes on there. It's a film from 2011, directed by Ubong Basi Nya. Movie Database says it's about 2.5 hours long. The video on YouTube is nearly 4 hours long, so I don't know which is telling the truth. And
they had to take you through the full phone shop, man.
Oh.
And all the accessories.
All the here's the Blackberry Bluetooth headphones, here's the Blackberry cases we have.
I did read an article in The Economist about how RIM, the company that made Blackberry's, was struggling at the time, but in Nigeria, obviously smartphones were taking off. About 65% of the population at the time of this article in 2012 had them, and half of those were Blackberries at the time. So it was a huge market, and they were widespread, and people were using Blackberry Messenger, and it was a way for people to, you know, boys to communicate with girls and girls to communicate with boys in a way that maybe hadn't done before. And so naturally a film would grow up around it, but the plot is bonkers. It starts at a really high level as well. You know the way, if you've ever made a video where you have like the stock title card, like text, that you can go, I can get one where it slides in from the right, or it zooms in from the front and then zooms back out again. Like the title card sequence is stock footage of the streets of Lagos with what sounds like free use music and these stock title cards text just like flowing in and out. The summary is, the lives of a group of stylish girls on campus revolve around their BlackBerry phones. Those that exist on the fringes of the popular group are willing to go to any length to attain one, simply to be accepted. You get lines like, hi girls, what's up? Nothing to be proud of except own a BlackBerry phone.
Okay. Or, no, there's no subtlety.
No. Oh, there's a guy tries it on with a girl and she goes, mister, in my hand here I have the BlackBerry Javelin, the BlackBerry Bold 1, the BlackBerry Bold 2, and I also have, but not in her hand because they probably couldn't get it for the film, the BlackBerry Curve. So if you really want to talk to me, get me the BlackBerry Bold 3 with a 4-year internet subscription. And then and only then can you actually really talk to me. It is amazing. Demise is meant to sleep with her lecturer. He tries to seduce her, and she goes out of the room and comes back in from the bathroom, I think, of this hotel with 3 girls and her mate, and films him on the bed with them with her phone.
Sorry, so she's just secreted 3 other women in the bathroom.
She had to sleep in a coffin overnight with 3 women. They crawled inside, and at the right moment, she reproduced them. So they film him on having sex, and they film him in bed with them, and he's like trying to get them off, and the girl, he's like really desperate, and the girls are like really unsubtly like stroking his crotch and his face. And the next scene is him, like, he throws himself on the floor begging the girls not to release the footage. It's not entirely clear to me why they do it, because they don't blackmail him in the end, they just release
it. I can explain that.
Please do.
There's a really good BBC documentary on it, actually. about how widespread it is. It's well known that a lot of those lecturers are, they're often depicted as figures of evil because they're often trying to extort women for grades, basically. So they need to come and perform sexual favors to get their grades. Uh-huh. And, you know, sometimes for guys, it's, you know, you need to bring money, but most of the time it's extorting all the young girls. So yeah, like often if you see a lecturer being shown, he's either really stuffy and boring, he's that guy, or he is the lecherous predator amongst young girls.
Well, this guy definitely is, but his line, when he's being like first entering the hotel room with Demisa, he does say the line as they're undressing, "I love excellent students in bed. Kill me, kill me." I don't entirely understand why he's saying that. I may have misheard him, but I'm pretty sure he says, "Kill me, kill me." He says, "I don't have any money to pay you if you try and blackmail me." And the women say, "Poverty is well spelt all over your body in capital letters. We know that."
I'll be honest, that's a good line.
It's pretty good.
That's almost Shakespearean. Poverty is well spelt all across your body. The bard would write that and take the afternoon off.
They list the social media websites they're going to post the footage on. But also lay out that they will be posting it on academic forums.
Of course. And do they sort of add the subscription fee of each service underneath?
And it does have, towards the end of the film, one of the worst car accident stagings you've ever seen. But again, it's so good. They use the same stock, the same jaunty stock music from the opening credits. There's no like tense, a car accident music is about to happen. And a guy's on his phone texting on a BlackBerry, and he keeps looking up at the road and then at his phone and back up again. And he hits the brakes at quite a reasonable speed, screams at something we do not see, hits the brakes. The car sort of skids at a pace that you would be able to resist.
Yep.
And then when it stops, again, just in the middle of the road with nothing in front of it, he then does like a bounce of his head forward and it cuts back to inside the car and his head is resting on the steering wheel with no blood or anything. It's the most low-key car accident staging you've ever seen. But that's not my moment.
Okay.
Because my moment involves someone we've mentioned.
Go on.
Mary Njoku. Mary Remy, I think, was her name at the time, because I don't think they'd been married yet. So this woman, this high-powered producer and actress, director, who's been involved in Iroko and ROK TV and all of that stuff, she is in Blackberry Babes. She plays Keisha, Daniel's girlfriend. Now, Daniel, we haven't mentioned yet. Daniel is very put upon. He's hardworking. He's trying to make some money. But he just can't buy her a bloody BlackBerry phone, can he? Mary is so insistent. "Do you know how many times I get embarrassment in public just because you refuse to buy me a BlackBerry phone?" And he's like, "Look, I've no money. I can't buy you one. Without you buying me a BlackBerry phone, there's no basis for this relationship."
I remember that line.
So good. Who the hell? He calls her darling, please. And she says, "Who the hell is your darling? Those men that buy BlackBerry phones for their darling. Do they have two heads, Daniel? Do they have two heads?"
That's literally Nigerian speak for, "What's the difference between you and them? They're normal people, so you should be able to do it too."
Amazing. Oh, it's a great line.
Yeah. My mom says that all the time.
For me, I was like, the same guy who wrote the kill me line has written this line. The last line I picked out of this scene with Mary and Daniel is, Daniel goes, "Okay, well, maybe if I save up some money, I might be able to buy you a BlackBerry phone next month." He's had no money 2 seconds ago. Then he says, "Next month, I might be able to buy." Daniel, stick to your guns, mate. But Keisha goes, "Next month, when I have an important party next week." The idea of turning up to this party without at least one BlackBerry phone in her hand is too much to bear.
I like the thought of this woman as well wearing BlackBerries around her waist like in Batman's utility belt. Yeah. Just at any moment.
Oh my goodness.
Mary Njoku is so like refined and high powered now, and like the leading light on Nollywood, the biggest maybe female name in the whole industry. But like you said, the granularity of this film, where it's a Mean Girls film, but it's just the obsession with BlackBerry phones. The fact that a relationship can have no basis without at least one BlackBerry phone between the two of them is too much to bear. My God, I can't believe we've gotten this long of a recording out of this topic.
Can I just say, aside from me really enjoying this chat with you guys, I am severely impressed with the amount of research you guys have put into this. Oh my goodness. Like, you guys really went in. Like, you went and actually, like, I feel like you should teach me about Nollywood.
Like, What, we can be white saviors? Why, thank you. Listen, our candidates this week for the World's Worst Nollywood Film are Ben's suggestion of the street casting of the white preacher in Festival of Love and the ensuing scene on the streets of Lagos with 200 school children amening him. Ola's suggestion of the CGI snake entering a woman's vagina off screen.
I like how you said, like, the snake enters a vagina off screen, which sort of feels like the brother stage direction to Shakespeare's Exit, pursued by a bear. Enter, pursued by a snake.
My suggestion of the scene between Keisha and Daniel from Blackberry Babes. I like the idea of a white man being brought in to try and, like, save this film, and the idea of evangelical preachers going over is a theme, I think, mm-hmm. in African cinema, it seems. On a suggestion, we love bad CGI. A snake inserting itself into a woman, presumably womb. I think it would stand out in any culture's films.
Yeah.
And I love Blackberry Babes because it's so mundane, and yet it tells you so much about Nigerian culture, particularly at that time in the early 2010s. I think maybe I'm going to pick, I know it's self-aggrandizing, but I might pick Blackberry Babes largely because I think we would get, in like a crappy Hollywood B-movie about a cult, we might get a CGI snake coffin situation.
It's got a sort of Sharknado feel to it.
It does have a sort of Sharknado feel to it. The white preacher coming up, we've had street casting stories. The white preacher coming over, it feels a bit like hack,
yeah,
crap movie. Blackberry Babes is so distinctly Nollywood that I think I kind of want to pick it because of it being glorious failure and gloriously Nollywood and embodying everything about, from watching loads of clips from Nollywood films, it feels like the most on-brand this is what Nollywood looks like.
Yeah, the script writing for sure. I know the acting was definitely very Nollywood.
So congratulations to Mary Njoku and all of those involved in Blackberry Babes. Before we go, I have to give you some of the world's best news of the week. And I don't know if this is good news or bad news. I guess it's good news because someone has been found out for trying to be a bit of a sneak, but it's also very worst foot forward. Author Mark Dawson has lost his top 10 position in the Sunday Times bestseller charts for his thriller The Cleaner after he revealed that he himself bought 400 copies of the book to get to a higher position. The book sales monitor Nielsen Bookscan began investigating it after he revealed on his own podcast, The Self-Publishing Show, that he placed an order for it at a cost of £3,600. He said he was motivated doing it by seeing he was in 13th place on the midweek chart, and he contacted readers overseas to see if they'd purchase the novel, if he had bought the book, they could buy it from him. And so it moved up to 8th place, so top 10. And so he's gained criticism, to say the least, from other authors and from Nielsen, of course. And Nielsen said, with current circumstances calling for alternative ways to achieve sales, we are having to monitor and judge many cases on an individual basis, and we apologise that on this occasion we misunderstood the intentions of this sales transaction.
I mean, I've written stories where I've gone, yeah, the only person who's going to read this is me, but he's taken it to the next stage.
What we need to do, if we listen to our own podcast, does that bump up our listener rating?
The sneaky trick to do is that if you just see a phone lying about at someone's house, get in there, get to the podcast app, subscribe, review, done.
The denouement to this is on Twitter, Dawson wrote, if I was intent on gaming the system, I would have bought 10,000 copies, sat on them forever, and been number one, brackets. I wouldn't have discussed it on a popular podcast either. So before we go, Ola, tell us, where can people find out more about you and your performance and all of the other stuff?
I just spent this lockdown building a whole new website, so please go check it out to make it seem like it was worth it. OlaTheComedian.com. I have started a podcast as well since I've been on the lockdown, and it's called Sunday Sermon with Ola, in continuation of my Sunday Service brand. Yeah, so that's on my YouTube channel, and it's on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all of the other platforms. And then also, yeah, just follow me on Instagram. Instagram's probably where I'm most active in terms of social media platforms.
Amazing. Meanwhile, we're all off to lock Ben in a coffin with an Android, the phone, Ben, and see what it does to him. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.